Do you guys want to come down the front for a little minute? Adios, amigos. Okay, so there's not many, but that's okay. So I'm wondering, the ones of you who are at school, good work, Amos. Those of you who are at school, have you ever been asked when you're at school to draw a family tree? Have you drawn a family tree? Yeah? Okay. Have you done it where you go, all right, here's me, and then who are my parents? And you sort of draw a bit of a tree. Who are my parents? There's mom and there's dad. And then I go, well, who are my mom's parents? Well, it's her mom and her dad. And then there's my dad's mom and my dad's dad. And then you can go, well, who's my grandparents' parents and those other grandparents' parents? And then suddenly the tree becomes really big and there's lots of people. Have you ever done that before? And then you start getting complicated because you put your brothers and sisters in, and then you put your cousins in, then put your second cousins in, and it makes this big web of a family tree. And you are genetically connected. Your bits of information in your body are connected to every single person in that tree. So you can do it that way, starting with you and going up. But you know, you can also do, when people do family histories, they start from the other way. They might start from one person and then work out who they married, and then who their kids were, then who their kids were, and then who their kids were, and then who, and then it gets all complicated. But it all starts often from one main person. They often call it a patriarch, often a guy or a lady matriarch. And they find out who they are. So I was supposed to bring a book today, but I didn't pick it up from my mum when I was in Adelaide on the holidays. And it's a book about one part of my family tree. And it's a book about the line or the family tree of MacDougall. The MacDougalls from the Isle of Mull in Scotland. So I've got parts of my body and my information from people who lived in Scotland. So, and this family tree started, they could be traced back right to the king, King Ewan MacDougall of Scotland. But the information and the tracking of who's connected to who started with a guy called Dugald MacDougall. Can you guys say that? Dugald MacDougall from the Isle of Mull in Scotland. And he was in the early 1800s. So there's like 200 years of tracing who was connected to who in this family tree. And do you know what? Some people used a lot of time and energy to write this book. And it's as big as a Bible. Like, it's the size of a Bible. It's massive. And do you know what? My name is in that book. It says, so from Dugald MacDougall, he had some kids, then he had the kids, and then they had some kids, and then one line of kids did this, and then one line of kids did this, and down one line there is this person, and then their daughter was Robin, and she married Colin, and they had six kids called Daniel, Sarah, Nathan, Matthew, Simon, and Caleb. And my name and my date of birth is in that book in writing. And I'm sorry, I can't show it to you because I forgot to bring it. But how cool is that, that I'm in a book about a family tree? Do you know, in the Bible, family trees are also important. There's a really special family tree starting with one guy, a patriarch, one guy as well, called Abraham. Abraham talked to God. Well, God talked to him and said, I want you to start a family of my people. And I want you to go away from where you're living and start afresh and be my family. And then Abram had a wife who was called Sarah. And Sarah, and Abram had a kid called Isaac, thank you. And then Isaac married, come on, Rebecca, well done. We have some historians, but Isaac married Rebecca, and they had kids, I'll give you a hint, they're twinsies, called Jacob and Esau, that's right. And then Jacob had some kids, he had lots of kids. Who can remember any of those kids? Yes, Joseph and Reuben, well done. We have two of the 12, excellent. So he had lots of children. And so Abraham had kids who had kids who had kids. And those grandkids of Abraham became the 12 tribes of Israel. So like Reuben's kids were one tribe, and Judah's kids were one tribe, and Joseph's kids, well actually his kids were the tribes. And all the different tribes had their own, what they call lines, okay? So, and one of, so Abraham's grandkids were the tribes, and one of those grandkids was called Levi. And his family from then on were called priests. They were the ones, remember we talked a few weeks ago about priests? You were the priest, weren't you, Jonathan? So the priests are the ones who help the people connect with God and help God connect with the people. And they had to keep doing that by offering sacrifices to make things right because the connection kept getting broken. So all of Levi's people, they were all priests who connected the people to God and God to the people. All right? So this is really important. And you had to prove, to be a priest, you had to get out your paperwork and go, well, you see, here's my family history. This is my dad, and this is my dad's dad, this is my dad's dad's dad, and this is my dad's dad's dad. And if you can work it back to there's Levi. See, I have the right to be a priest because this is my family history. Okay? So we're going to talk a bit more about that in the sermon. But I thought it'd be really important to remind you that it's actually in the Bible where you come from and your lineage or your history or your line is really important. I've got some papers here today, just over there in a minute, you can go get one. So today for the sermon, I'd love you to be listening to me because I want you to fill in this, okay? So I want you up the top to write what we're talking about today. So what book, I'll give you a hint, it's called Hebrews, and then what chapter in the book, all right? And in this circle here, I'm going to be talking about Jesus. So I want you to draw a picture of Jesus. You're in luck, no one actually knows what Jesus looks like, so whatever you draw is absolutely possibly right. Okay, so you draw me a picture of Jesus in this one here, all right? And then when I'm talking about, near the end, there's some points. And when I'm talking about it, I'd like you to fill in what parts you'll see on the screen to what I'm talking about. And then down here, I want you, if you can remember, so I'll actually have some pictures of someone giving sacrifice, like a priest giving sacrifices. But if you can remember or you can make it up, I want you to draw a picture of a priest giving some sacrifices on an altar. Okay, maybe if you were here and you can remember the time that Jonathan got up and I made him do those giving sacrifices and flicking blood, you could draw a picture of that. Or if you've seen a picture in the Bible of the temple and the priests, or if you see a picture up on the screen, that's what you can do. All right, so there's some sheets, there's some texts over there with Olive and some sheets. So I'd like you to pick them up, take them back to your seats. It's not only for kids. If you need something to do with your hands when you're listening, so it helps you listen, I would like you to take one of those as well and fill it in. Okay, thanks guys for listening. Keep listening to me. This is not just for the adults, this is for you guys as well. All right, head back to your seats. So we have been talking and going through and looking at and reading and discussing the book of Hebrews. Now, Hebrews is written by a person who we don't know. It's anonymous. So that's why you hear the pastors always talking about the writer of the book of Hebrews, or the writer to the Hebrews, or the writer says this, because we actually don't know who it is that wrote the book. But it was obviously someone who was really smart and someone who is really good at debating and arguing, because he puts out a really strong case and often uses big words and gets really quite convoluted with his arguments. But he's trying to make a point. And the people he was writing to were Jewish Christians, people who had been brought up as Jews, people of Israel, following all of the laws of Israel. But they heard about from disciples or the disciples' disciples, they heard about Jesus, the truth of Jesus. And they believed the good news that Jesus was the good news about Jesus and that God, that Jesus connects us back to God. Now the problem was these Jewish Christians, these Jews who became Christians, started to get persecuted. The Roman emperors at the time were quite horrible, and they did some horrendous things to the Christians. Like, we're not just talking about people being unkind to them, or maybe, you know, they might lose a job, or maybe someone did an unkind meme about them. They were being burnt at the stake to provide entertainment and light at the emperor's dinner parties. They were being sent into arenas and being chased by dogs and lions. They were being crucified, horrendous deaths, just like Jesus did. This is like hardcore persecution. And so some of the Jewish Christians sort of went, maybe we don't heaps want to be called a Christian anymore. Maybe we can just go back to connecting with God, not through Jesus, but through the old way. You know, we always managed to connect with God by going to the temple and going to the priest and the priest giving an offering on our behalf to God. That kind of worked. So why can't we just go back? We're not getting rid of God. We're just maybe not going to be Christians. We'll sort of distance ourselves from Jesus and go back to doing our God connection the other way. And the writer of the Hebrews was like, no, no, you can't do that. No. And the whole point of the letter to the Hebrews is can pretty much be summed up like this. Dear Jewish Christians, Jesus is greater. He is worthy of your trust and your adoration. So, whatever happens, regardless of what's happening, don't abandon your faith in him. And he goes about doing this. He sets out to prove that Jesus is greater. He sets out to prove it by referring to many aspects of the Jewish history and the Jewish faith. And he compares and contrasts those parts of the Jewish history and faith to Jesus. He compares Jesus with angels, with the law, with Moses, with the high priest, and then in this guy, in this chapter, chapter 7, to a guy called Melchizedek. Who is Melchizedek? That is a very interesting question. Well, that story, and it's a small story, it's all of three verses, can be found in Genesis 14, verses 17 to 20. It's pretty fast. You blink if you miss it. It's during the time of Abraham, remember? The father of Israel, the one who started the whole thing. It was when he'd been called out, he'd started, pulled his family aside, and he was going around and he won some pretty epic battles when he shouldn't have won them because God was on his side. I'm going to let the Bible Story Project guys tell you this story.
Abraham is returning victorious from a risky battle. And he passes by the city of Shalem, and this king comes out to meet him. And we're told that this king is also a priest who serves the same God that Abraham does.
Ah, yes, Melchizedek. This man's a mystery. We don't know why he worships Abraham's God. We don't even know his family lineage.
Exactly. But here's what happens. Melchizedek brings this great feast out to Abraham and his army, and then he gives God's blessing to Abraham, saying, God is the one who gave him this victory over his enemies. Then Abraham gives Melchizedek one-tenth of everything that he has, and that's the story.
So what is it all about?
Well, Melchizedek is the king and the priest of Shalem, which is an ancient name, short for Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, which will later become the capital of Abraham's future family, where the temple is built. And that 10% that Abraham gives Melchizedek, that's just like the 10% Israelites will later give to honor the priests who work in the temple.
Exactly. And so here is Abraham, the father of the Israelites, and he's honoring a royal priesthood that existed long before Israel's temple or their priests.
Ah, Melchizedek.
Excellent. Melchizedek. So there you go. So that's the story. So this is how the writer to the Hebrews starts the chapter. He pretty much goes, let's talk about Melchizedek. And he talks about him and he pretty much goes over the same story. And he says, and then he talks about Abraham and he talks about some differences and similarities with them. And he says, Melchizedek, his actual name means King of Righteousness or King of Justice. And he was the king of Shalem, which is also another word is Shalom, which is peace. So he was a king of the place called peace. So he was known as King of Righteousness and Peace. What an epic name of a king, King of Righteousness and King of Peace. I would love to have been in his city. And he also says that he was the priest of the Most High God. So this guy, out of nowhere, God's called Abraham over there, but there's someone still worshiping the Most High God over here. A king and a priest. And that was really rare. There was kings that did all the king stuff, sort of connected people with each other, made sure trading happened well, made sure people weren't fighting, did all the logistics of people. And then there was priests, the people who did the connecting people to God stuff. So it was people to people, kings, and people to God, priests. And yet this guy was a king and a priest. Didn't happen very often. And then they go on to say in the original Genesis story, but also in Hebrews, that he was without mother and father, without ancestors. He came out of nowhere. And this is in a time where who your parents were, who your line was, who your ancestors were a big deal. And yet, this guy, it's never written anywhere where he came from. He's just out of nowhere. And it doesn't even say his date of his birth or his date of his death. So he kind of, he just lingers there as this one point in history. And he goes, now, let's talk about Abraham. He is, as the writer of the Hebrews says, he's the great patriarch of the faith. He's great patriarch of Israel. He was the father of the nation of Israel. He was kind of a big deal. No, he wasn't kind of a big deal. He was the big deal. No one was bigger than Abraham. Abraham started it all. Abraham was the one who talked to God, and God said, I want you to start my people. In terms of the family of Israel and Jewish people, you couldn't get any bigger or better than Abraham, unless you're talking about God Most High himself. So then this guy called Melchizedek is connected with Abraham. And so, of course, the father of Abraham, as we talked about in our kids' talk just before, his great-grandson was Levi. And from Levi, all those of that line were priests. So the writer of the Hebrews talks about it in a bit of a confusing way, but he says, so this, there's Abraham, the great patriarch, and connected to him are all the priests there is to come. But what happens in the story? It's not Abraham giving a blessing, being the most important person, to this random Melchizedek person. It's Melchizedek giving a blessing to Abraham. And the writer of the Hebrews says, this is clear through that actually Melchizedek is better than Abraham and therefore better than all the priests that had come. And you're like, well, that's great. Melchizedek is greater than Abraham, but why? Why is the writer of the Hebrews bothering to talk about this? What's the point of a connection between Melchizedek and Abraham and one being greater? Well, the connection comes into play in the only other time this random Melchizedek is mentioned in the Bible. So you've got, on one hand, back here in Genesis, you've got Melchizedek's story mentioned. And then 2,000 years in the future, you have the writer of the Hebrews talking about it in a letter. And then smack bang somewhere between, 1,000 years after and 1,000 years before, is David, King David. And he, from a vision from God, writes a song. And it's a prophetic song about who the future king of Israel will be. The future forever king, the king who will be above all kings and the one who will rule properly and be the best king ever and won't be broken and corrupt like all the other kings. And he says this, actually, and the song is a conversation from God to this new king. And it goes like this in Psalm 110. The Lord has sworn and will not change his mind. You, meaning this new king, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. And that is the connection point between Genesis and Hebrews in Psalm 110. And so this is what the writer is trying to convey in his argument, that there is this important priest from the order or the line of Melchizedek. And he really wants us to get this, because leading up to this, in chapters 5 and 6, it says it three times. You are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek, in the order of Melchizedek, in the order of Melchizedek, a high priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. He really wants us to get this. So this is where the main point, I think, of the passage comes, with a rhetorical question. This smart writer of the Hebrews poses a question to the Jewish Christians. He goes, so, if the priesthood of Levi, on which the law was based, could have achieved perfection that God intended, why did God need to establish a different priesthood with a priest in the order of Melchizedek instead of in the order of Levi and Aaron? And it's a rhetorical question, because we all know why. Because the priesthood wasn't perfect. It didn't reach the perfection that God required. They were constantly having to do it, wasn't it? What was the point of a priest? To make connection between people and God. And so the priests, priests of Levi and Aaron, had to constantly do it, didn't they? They had to constantly make a sacrifice for themselves to connect themselves back to God. Okay, I'm right with God, and now I can help these people get right with God. Okay, cool. You go from the temple and you sin, and the connection is broken. And so then you have to wait until the next time you go to the temple and make another sacrifice. And the next time that the priest sinned, they had to go and make another sacrifice to make a connection with God. It was a broken a system that kind of worked, but it didn't work fully. And so he was being rhetorical, going, well, hang on, why did he have to do this? He had to bring a priest in the order of Melchizedek, a priest that was before all the priests, a priest that was outside of all the priests, a priest that was different. And he makes it clear. He goes, do you know what? Jesus is a priest like Melchizedek. He wasn't in the order of Levites. He just came out of nowhere. In fact, he was kind of in the order of the kings. He was from the line of Judah. He never died, not permanently. He raised to life again. So like Melchizedek, who didn't have a death recorded, Jesus actually doesn't have a death permanently recorded. He's alive. Jesus is a priest like Melchizedek. Jesus is the one that King David was singing about. He is the priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. So then he follows his argument along and goes, let me tell you about how Jesus is different to all the other priests and all the other sacrifices. We've seen that he's a king. It says so many places and so many times he's a king of righteousness and he's the king of peace. We know that about Jesus, and he came from the line of Judah, the king line. But then if you want to read along, in verse 23 of Hebrews, it says, there are many priests under the old system, for death prevented them from remaining in office. Family lines, priest has a child who's a priest, has a child who's a priest, has a child who's a priest, has a child who's a priest. They had to do that because they kept dying. It wasn't a permanent thing. You kept on going, the sacrifices wasn't permanent, but also the priests weren't permanent. We just keep having to get more because they kept on dying. But the next verse, verse 24, but because Jesus lives forever, his priesthood lasts forever. Ha ha! Jesus is better and greater than all the priests put together. Those priests died. Jesus is a priest who never dies and is lived forever. And so his ability to make connection between us and God doesn't stop. It remains forever. The connection between us and God remains forever because Jesus is a priest forever, a king priest forever. And then in verse 27, it goes, unlike those other priests, he did not need to offer sacrifices every day. The priests did this for their own sins first and then for the sins of the people. We looked at that the other week when Riley was speaking, didn't we? That they just had to, on one day a year, on the Day of Atonement, they did a big blanket sacrifice. But on an ongoing basis, almost daily, there was sacrifices happening for some reason or another in the temple. Priests were constantly having to make sacrifice to mend the connection, mend the brokenness between man and God, people and God. And then they'd go away and the next one would come in. Oh, you need to have the connection made between you and God. It was a constant thing. And they had to keep doing it for themselves first because they were broken and they needed their connection mending between them and God. But the end of the verse says this. So the high priests had sacrifices every day. But Jesus did this once for all when he offered himself as a sacrifice for the people's sins. Jesus was one sacrifice for all time. It was a perfect sacrifice. It was a sacrifice that was outside of all the other sacrifices by a priest who was outside of all the other priests. And because he was perfect, sinless, blameless, spotless, his sacrifice mattered, and his sacrifice lasted for all time, for all people. That sacrifice completely opened up the connection between people and God forever. It wasn't something that had to keep on being done. It was opened up forever. The writer of Hebrews goes, the old priesthood was weak and was useless in comparison. How can you compare? Jewish Christians, how can you compare just going back to using the temple system again, the priest system again, when you've got this priest? I was thinking about it and I was trying to think of how I can explain that. What is it like? And I think it's a bit like this. Oh, hang on. Jesus is greater, if I needed to have that written down. Jesus is greater than all the priests and all the sacrifices. I think it's like this. Who knows what this is? Kids, do you know what this is? Jonathan, what is it? Yes, the official term is a tin can phone. This is quite the original sort of era, tin can phone. Sometimes you do it with styrofoam cups, sometimes you do it with paper cups, but yes, you put one person puts the ear on that end, and then you stretch the string out, and the other person puts the ear on this end. Who played with this as a kid? Hands up. Yeah, a fair few people played with the tin can phones as a child. Yeah, and do you know what? They actually worked pretty well. We used to have one going from one treehouse cubby house all the way across our church backyard over to the other cubby house. And you could actually hear well. You could whisper and all the other people were down below and you'd be whispering away your secrets to the other tin can phone. And it worked. Like, it made a connection between two people. It worked. But as you know, if you played with them, there were some limitations. If the line got a bit slack, it wouldn't work. If you went around too many corners, that would stop the vibrations going through the string, and then it would stop the sound. And you couldn't go very far. You were limited by the length of the string. And also, you know, you're limited to kind of being in the same yard or proximity, maybe over a neighbor's fence. That's as far as you could go. But it worked. And our parents gave us these toys to try and show us how a phone would work. You know, it's a type of communication and it gets you used to using communication. But do you remember the day when you were after school and you said, "Mum, can I call my friend?" And instead of using the tin can phone across the fence, Mum let you use the telephone. And you got to use the phone to make a phone call to your friend. Kids, you might be going, "What the dickens is that?" That is an old school phone, and that's actually quite a modern one because it has push buttons instead of having a dial. And I'm sure there's ones that people can remember phones in before the dial ones. And so you got to use a phone and you didn't have to worry about there being a kink in the line. You didn't have to worry about the fact that you could still see the person over the other side. You could call your friend in another suburb. And on Sunday nights, you could call your auntie who lived in Sydney interstate because it was cheaper rates. And so this, you were able to make a connection in a whole new way. And then, of course, these happened. And no longer, kids, you might remember these a bit more, no longer do you have to be stuck to a plug that goes into a wall to talk to someone. You can take the phone anywhere. Your connection with people is anytime. I go into my kids, like in lounge room sometimes, and my kids are just doing daily life with their phone on FaceTime. And like, "What are you doing? Who's that?" "That's Esme." "Why? What? Are we just, she's cleaning her room and I'm cleaning my room." Why? Because they love the instant and always connection between people. How much better? You would never go back, would you? You would never go back to a tin can phone once you experienced a landline and then once you experienced a mobile. It's out of date. It's been made redundant. It's pointless. It kind of worked for the time being, but compared to the newer way, it's pointless. And I'm sorry, guys, if anyone still has a home phone, they're kind of a bit redundant too now, aren't they? It's out of date. Kids, if you're drawing here and you've drawn a picture of a priest offering sacrifices, I wonder if you could draw a big out-of-date sticker, stamp it on the top of the priests. That system is now out of date. It's been made redundant. It's no longer worth it. This is the model that we want. And I just think that's so much like us and like us as a people. and Jesus. Why would we go back to having the old system of sacrifices and having to make or constantly make connection with God when you've got Jesus, who is the always, every, anytime, open, forever connection between people and God? He is the priest that makes this connection. He is the one who goes, yes, I make the connection. And yes, I'm not only the priest that makes the sacrifices, but I am the sacrifice. I did it once and for all. I've made the connection between people and God. And unlike an iPhone, it will never be superseded with the next model. It is once and for all connection. It's clear, Jesus is greater than all the priests and all the sacrifices. So, what does this mean? I guess for early Jewish Christians, which is who this person's writing to, it's obvious. Don't go back to the old system. It's not worth it. It doesn't make sense. It's redundant. It's out of date. But what about us now? Thinking about this, and I think sometimes we tend to go back to the old system too, to the ways of doing life we had before we knew Jesus personally, the things that we try to do to hit the spot, to get a sense of life and living, the things we say, the things we consume, the things we take part in to get a sense of life. But we know that true life is found in a connection with the author of life, the one who starts and holds all life together. And that's what Jesus has done. Jesus opens up that connection for true life in the now. So maybe this is a bit of a challenge to you. Maybe you need to think about, are there things that you're doing to get a buzz, to get a sense of life, when actually what you need is to focus on the connection that Jesus has made to God, the author of all life and all true abundance of life. And he did that because death couldn't hold him down on that cross. He was undefeated. One of the verses in Hebrews, which I want to talk about, but it's too much, but it goes, Jesus is a priest because of the power of a life that cannot be destroyed. Jesus has an indestructible life, and he offers that life and that connection to us. So we have a confidence of a better hope. However hard and horrific the world looked to the Jewish Christians, the writer to the Hebrews said, don't abandon your faith, have faith. And however hard and horrific and tricky and complex and convoluted and weighing down our lives are, have faith. We can have full and instant and anytime and absolute connection with God and life through Jesus, through the fact that he himself is our, that's what it means when we keep talking about he is our high priest. He is our God people connector, and he is our sacrifice. He is the way that he heals the connection that was broken between God and man. And that, in a nutshell, is Hebrews 7. It's really long, and I'd encourage you guys to maybe sometime this afternoon with a cup of tea or coffee, or sometime during the week when you're reading the Bible, to go back and read Hebrews 7. And with a bit of this information and background, sit with each verse and really think about what that means for us, that Jesus is our high priest and Jesus is our perfect sacrifice, once and for all, always and forever, opening up that connection between us and God. We can say a quick prayer to him anytime because of Jesus. We can do everything and any connection with God because of Jesus. And we get to have that right up to the day when they're in heaven and there's no need to have a connection because we'll be right face to face with God Almighty. And how amazing is that? Let's pray.